Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, all kinds of interesting things. I thought this evening we would talk about spiritual justice. And most of you don't know this, but the spiritual group I'm a member of, a number of people in it have been involved in dealing with this issue. Some of you may have guessed that because I said we needed to have a person who was an attorney who could help us. That was a couple months ago, and we actually got one, so that was always helpful, you know. And I thought that we would talk about this subject because there's been some news lately about various kinds of, we'll call it activities on the part of our government to try to deal with criminality and other factors. Now, I think it's important to, again, define what we're talking about tonight. So before I start that, if you would like to call in, you can. And the numbers should be right on the screen that you're looking at. So you can use those 800 numbers if you're in the U.S. or Canada. And if you want to call in from elsewhere, you can use the regular phone numbers. But remember that then you're going to have to pay for it. So if you're calling from Australia or some unusual place like that, that would be your phone bill. Okay, so now, what do we mean by spiritual justice? Spiritual justice is the way in which, according to God's thought, because spirit is the thought of our Creator, as best as we can determine. Of course, when I talk about it, I'm interpreting, you know, that my phone line to God has not been working great. I mean, it's working okay, I mean, sometimes. But, it's not to the point where I get this information and just say it directly. So it's always an interpretation, going through my system, etc. I'm being a little facetious, I hope you realize. Okay, so spiritual is the thought of God as it applies to the what we'll call the system of justice. And I'm referring mostly to Western types of justice, especially that where I'm talking from, which is in the United States and some other countries similar to the United States. Each country has somewhat a different form of justice. There is a thing called a world court, which kind of works for a lot of different countries, but it's obscure, and it doesn't usually apply to the sorts of things we'll be talking about this evening. And one of the problems that we have in our world right now is that we tend to be very, we'll call it, lower mentally focused, somewhat conceptually developing, and we're not fully conceptually developed in our mental processing, which means that we don't easily recognize truth. We have pretty bad senses when it comes to developing the giving of wisdom and developing wisdom, first of all, to give in circumstances. And so it is by nature that human beings at the present time, on an average, are going to be relatively, we'll say, lame at producing justice in any, we'll say, legal arena or any type of system that was designed to try to give justice to people and to society. Justice is not about individuals as much as it is to people in society. It's more of a group processing mechanism. There is such a thing as individual justice, but it is always within the context of society in general. It doesn't matter whether it's monetary, which unfortunately is the material side of things, rearing its head because we live in such a highly infused, dense, physical world. So we tend to look at things in terms of physical outcomes, which includes mostly money. And when it isn't that, then it's usually the process of how one physical body is affected by another physical body in some sense. So it's all about a physical thing. We do have some justice about certain things that deals with emotionality and a little bit about mentality, but most of it is not focused in that direction. And so categorically, we're way out of balance. When people talk about justice, they're not really talking about the whole realm of the human experience, which is the higher mental, lower mental, creative, imaginative, astral, which some people would call love or emotion, depending upon what direction it's focused in, and then finally the etheric physical. So most people think of it as mostly etheric physical, in a sense, when we talk about justice. And society tends to lean very strongly that way. But how can you have justice in a society when most people are just a little past the midpoint of developing their mental apparatus to the point where they can even understand what that all means? Because they aren't wise enough. They don't have enough unity in their mental thinking so their concepts, when put together, can find truth. Truth is the virtue of the mental world, and it's where we should be trying to find spiritual justice in our society. I think it'd be interesting, though, to talk about a little bit about what justice was like, and I think it would also enlighten what I just said, because it can confuse people, because since it's beyond where a lot of people can think, they may not even understand what I'm saying. So why don't we go back in time? I'm going to talk about the Atlanteans. Now, a lot of people say, oh, that folk stuff, that folklore stuff, or that the funny things about the myths about Atlantis. And no, it's something that I think is real, but you don't have to. Because if you want to believe that I'm talking about it allegorically right now, that's fine. I don't mind. It's not going to bother me in the least. But the Atlanteans, as I understand them, didn't think very mentally and thought almost exclusively using their astral nature. I mean, their lower mental apparatus worked because that's where their personalities were formed, as they are today in human beings. But they had very little conceptual understanding of things. And without concepts backing up what we think in the examples of concepts, which we call thought forms, then it really doesn't mean much. You know, the mental thought is of a minor amount of understanding to a person. Most of their understanding came through their feelings. And so consequently, for the majority of time that the Atlanteans existed, they determined justice by how they felt. But not just any old person. They chose people who they thought were the most clear in their feelings, who loved the most, in an astral sense at least, who were very giving. They usually tried to have three judges who would try to, we'll say, I guess the best way to describe it is arbitrate in a case wherever there was seemingly injustice of some sort. And these judges of the day, now don't compare them to judges of we're familiar with, because these were really different kinds of people. They didn't have training so much in a whole bunch of laws, although there were some laws. They had some principles and some rules that they applied, but it was all about how they felt. And so they would listen to a case, and if two out of three, or all three, felt a certain way about what would be just in listening to the case. Now, this could be a criminal, it could be what we today would call civil, any kind of disagreement that had something other than a crime involved, it would be civil in their society. They would then deliberate and come up with what they felt would be a just solution for as an outcome. Now, this means that three judges in one place may come up with something very different than three judges in another place, and this didn't bother them. because sometimes they were very creative in their justice, and both three or 20 different ways that different judges came up with were all okay, provided that they thought it was a pretty just outcome, even though it may not be the same one that happened 20 miles away or 100 miles away or whatever, because this was a different system than the one we have today. They're more concerned about equity than they were about legality and the application of a certain rule or law. And equity to them was a bigger part of the situation. We are very opposite of that. Even though equity is supposed to be part of the law, it's really not applied very often. So here, I hope this is enlightening, because it gives us something to think about. If the Atlantean, and they were very successful in this system, I think their court system was probably equal to or superior in the outcomes of justice in a spiritual sense than our systems are today. Now, I know that sounds like, you know, heresy or something. Like, oh, this guy's nuts. How could these people who, you say, mostly thought with their creative imagination, how could they have more spiritual justice? Well, because their concern was literally of the spiritual issue as it applied to how they felt. Whereas we today in our society, because our mental apparatus, our mental minds, are not very well developed in wisdom, and especially in giving wisdom or love wisdom, we are we're less developed than they were in that particular body relative to their body that they used. They were using their astral, we're using our mental more, and we're not doing as good a job. So we have what we call justice based upon laws, but there is very little spiritual application, meaning that nobody that I'm aware of thinking about, well, gee, is this really right? Does this make God smile? Is this something we're co-creating with our Creator about and we're adding to the virtue of the world? Well, I'd like to know how many judges are doing that. Probably almost none, because in our present legal system, that might even be considered illegal. Now, I mean, we have to be honest about this. So spiritual justice is a hard thing to find in today's world. And that makes a number of issues start coming into focus and be of greater concern than they might be. Things like, well, should we put people to death for various crimes? Should we imprison them for prolonged periods of time for the sake of punishment? Are we doing this to prevent other people from creating crimes as what some people would call a deterrent? In other words, well, it's great to fry them in the electric chair or gas them or maybe just plug a couple chemicals into their arm and kill them that way, because that's a deterrent. That's going to prevent other people from doing that, whatever it was that we didn't like they did. Usually it's murder, but sometimes it's other things. And so this is what we look at. And we've got to start asking ourselves, well, okay, we're deciding to do these pretty brutal things. In recent times, the United States has initiated certain methods of what are considered by some people torture, to get other people to prevent further crime from taking place. This is their rationale for doing it. And, I mean, we have to consider now, okay, we're deciding to do all these things, and we have been for a long time. And since the advent of DNA, there's been about 150 people that were either in prison for life or for very long periods of time or, you know, sentenced to death, who have been discovered to be innocent. That's not a good thing. Then you got to ask, and since it's so hard to get this to that point, we need to prove it, there could be 10 times that number who are sitting in a prison right now who are innocent. And, you know, the old saying, it's better to let 100 people go who are guilty than to convict one innocent person. And the reason for that is it's an affront against spiritual justice and an affront against God to claim you're doing something just that is very unjust. So the question of injustice is worse than just about anything, since it's done on a societal basis for the most part, and the individual has almost no chance against a society that makes a mistake that's hugely unjust against someone. So you can see that that's a real danger. Now, I hope I'm not going too far afield on this, because I could go on for a long time about this subject. I just try to give you a taste of what I'm trying to bring us to. You know, this program is mostly there to get you to think. It's not there to convince you of anything. I don't think people who listen to this program need convincing. I think they need the ideas to promote their consciousness and to provide them with a vehicle for greater thought, and hopefully thought that is more virtuous. That's what I'm trying to do anyway. Okay, so here is a sticky system. I mean, we got a real problem because our present mode is based upon a weak apparatus, our own higher minds that are conceptually confused at times, sometimes greatly illusioned. And remember that the Atlanteans, as I presented them, didn't use juries. You might ask yourself, well, why didn't they use juries? We got 12 people who sit, or sometimes, some places it's only 9 or 8 or whatever. Well, sometimes it's 12 people. 12 people are sitting around, sometimes there's alternates as well, who are trying to understand what the truth is, and then they get together and all come up with a conclusion. Isn't that better? Doesn't that mean that if we got 12 people who have to determine what is the truth, isn't it better than one person or three people? You know, I'm not so sure. Because, again, juries are selected. They're not randomly. They're selected by the attorneys, and they try to sway the juries in various ways, and they try to pick them so that they'll have certain characteristics. And by the time you look at this thing, you're not dealing with a level playing field. And you can say, well, what, you got two attorneys, so one side can strike some. And it doesn't quite work that way, not really. As a matter of fact, the entire system has some serious flaws, and the jury part of it is maybe the weakest link. Does that mean we should just have a single judge decide? No, because a single judge is kind of dangerous, because that judge is going to have a lot of prejudices and other issues possibly. But besides that, it's not really whether a person is individual or group. It's the question of law. And here's the problem. Most of the issues of law have been decided by people who are more concerned about certain, we'll say, factors that deal with convenience and with societal norms and with establishing retribution and trying to create a deterrent rather than find spiritual justice. This is where the emphasis is. Spiritual justice is, I don't even know if it's even taught in most places. I've never heard of it. So here is where the problem lies. We just aren't looking in the right direction to be concerned about what needs to get done. I think three judges or even a jury might work if you really had, if the foundation was that you have to establish spiritual justice. In other words, there has to be a virtuous outcome that serves all of the elements that I mentioned and those who, for one reason or another, are going through this ordeal. I guess we'd say standing trial or whatever the situation is. So this is, and also, we would tremendously cut down the litigation in lawsuits if spiritual justice was the key component rather than it be based upon a arbitrary nature of war. And the reason I say that is because I think most people are aware of this, that there's tremendous inequity in the civil system, at least in the United States, because it's almost 100% weighted towards those with the better attorneys who can spend more money on, you know, promoting their case, and who literally have the side of law on their side, even though they might not deserve spiritual justice, where the people have laws against them, where there's terrible spiritual injustice. This is not an easy thing to correct, unfortunately. But I'm going to make some suggestions. And to begin with, we have to start looking at how do we make this system into something that I think is simpler, less abused and used, less costly, less time consuming, and produces spiritual results rather than purely quote unquote legal results. And the first thing I would look at was the most drastically inequitable problems that we have. And I think that starts where you deal with life and death. It's my suggestion, and now some of you are going to disagree with it. This is fine. I mean, you know, I don't have any problem with this. It's my suggestion that we do away with capital punishment that is determined and forced upon an individual. I believe people should, if they're convicted of what we call a capital offense, in which they could be put to death, that it should be their option. And this is my suggestion. Now, you're going to think I'm crazy. Okay, that's all right. This is my suggestion. And this even goes for evil. Now, I'm telling you, I certainly believe in evil. Okay. But if you already have an evil person that has been found guilty, or anybody that's been found guilty of some terrible capital crime, in which death is one of the potential outcomes, that you're going to put the person to death, you give them the option. You say, look, here's your option. If you want to effectively kill yourself, we'll allow that to take place in the least nasty way possible. You know, we'll anesthetize you, put you to sleep, and then we'll end your life. If that's what you want, because you've already been convicted of a capital crime. However, you can go through door number two if you prefer. That's door number one. And if you want to go through door number two is the following. And that is, even though you've committed the most heinous acts and terrible things against society, you have the option to live your life in a highly, we'll say, restricted manner, which probably would include some type of prison, but not exactly the ones that you're familiar with anyway, in which you must live your life to repay all those who you harmed in whatever ways you can, and part of your repayment is to raise your consciousness. Now, some of you have read Life's in Meaning. You say, I remember reading something about that you wrote. Yeah, well, okay, it's fine. And raise your consciousness to the point, well, it's an endless point, but you keep raising it so that you can find new and better ways. And you can consult other people. You can do. You don't have to do this in complete isolation. So that you find better and better ways to reduce the recidivism of others who might be doing lesser crimes, to act as a deterrent, help act as a deterrent for others who might have done these terrible crimes that you have chosen to do, and to resolve as best as you possibly can the spiritual development by giving in numerous ways, because all your victims will give you, which will be part of the system, the victims will be asked, they could be forced, but they would be asked to give all of the ways that they might see assistance to how they feel their losses. And, of course, the victims probably, if you killed somebody, would be those people who survived. And you would be involved in doing this for the rest of your life, but your life would not be ended by the state or anybody else unless you chose to. Because if you said, well, you know what, I don't want to live any longer, so just go ahead and zap me or whatever you want to do, well, that would be an option. Because you can't, you see, it's evil to force others to try to think or feel a certain way. So we can't force that on them, but we give them the option. And you see, this is a really better system. And I'll explain what's better about it. First of all, what if we're wrong? I mean, if we really, if there's like 1,500 people, possibly, it's a projection, 150 we know about in the past few years, that we've made terrible mistakes on. Some of them are already dead. We can't do anything about them. But, I mean, this is way better than putting people to death. Because once you do that, you know what? You can't put them back to life. You know, it's Humpty Dumpty and it's all over. You're gone. And so you better come up with a better system if you don't really have 100% batting average, which we have far from that. So this is, I'm suggesting this, and it's not because I want to coddle the criminal, or I want to make it, you know, I just think that nobody should be put to death because death is a bad thing. Actually, we're all going to die. What's the big deal? Okay, so the worst part about it is somebody's doing it to you, right? Okay, it's a terrible thing. I agree to it. I agree with that. And that's why we fear it. Nobody wants to be forced to die. I don't think people do anyway. But this is a reasonable way of looking at the situation that we have right now. And maybe it's why there's only a couple countries on Earth that still have capital punishment. Because other countries have said the same thing. Now, they haven't done what I'm suggesting, but at least they got rid of the capital punishment then, because they're beginning to see that this is nuts. If we really aren't so sure of ourselves, you know, put people to death, that's a bad thing, because everybody in the society is going to suffer from that. There's negative karma from it. I'm not kidding you. I mean, if you live in the United States, you better be thinking about this, because we're one of the last places on Earth that does this. So we have to really concern ourselves with these issues. That doesn't mean there aren't sort of terrible countries where they put people to death. You can't even find the people anymore. They just disappear. But I'm talking about within their justice system, they don't have a death penalty, supposedly. They just send them out to a place where they die in 2 or 3 years from starvation and cold after they made a bunch of Nike shoes or something. But, you know, what I'm suggesting here is that we have a more rational way of attempting to, we'll say, deal with the most serious problem we have right now, which is this question of putting people to death. And you can say, well, what about the monsters? You know, I suppose you do this with Hitler, you know. And I consider Hitler an evil person. You know, he was an evil person. But why not? I mean, Where is the actual harm if he was given the option? Because he was, in a sense, and he killed himself, maybe. But the point is that, you know, where's the harm? I think it's worth a thought. And there's so much more to say about this. I realize that I'm really getting people, I hope, thinking. All right, so we've got a lot more to talk about when we come back from break. And we'll do that in, give or take, a couple of minutes, and then I'll continue on with some more things that might get people really a little bit upset.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's hidden meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We are talking tonight about spiritual justice. And I'm just getting warmed up. Okay. So I guess I don't want to go too deep, much deeper, into this question of just capital punishment and death, etc. But I do think that that is the area I would start with if I was going to start to change things, because it's such a dire issue. I mean, once you kill somebody, you can't really say, well, gee, we should have done that first, because that person still be alive. So that would be my first suggestion. If we're going to make some changes, I think it would be good to kind of go in that direction. And then I think there's more to it than that, even within that realm for sure. We could have a whole show on just that one subject. But I want to talk about other things that involve spiritual justice. So what else would I suggest? Well, you know, the Atlanteans were not all that bad about some of the things that they did, and some stuff they did was terrible, but this justice system they had wasn't that bad. And I would suggest that maybe we reach back in time, or if you believe it's just a bunch of nonsense, then it's a great idea anyway, and possibly we keep our present justice system, because it would be too hard to just throw it out and go back to the Atlantean, and we couldn't do it anyway. In reality, we're not any more loving, and in some cases we're less loving than they were, so it's really not going to help just to throw out what we have. So what I suggest is that we keep our present system, but we add to it. Let's add the three Atlantean judges in there and have them come up with, and we even can keep our jury, since we're pretty fond of them in some parts of the world, like the United States. So we can have juries if you want, but we have, you know, we have evoked to them the responses of three judges who are there to see if there is true spiritual justice coming from how they see equity and how they feel about what they hear. Sure, you might say, well, that's going to be expensive. We're going to have three more people listening. Well, not really, because it'll cut the trial a lot shorter, because you cut out some of the nonsense about laws, and you say, well, if it's truly spiritually unjust, and if it is, in fact, that these three judges unanimously say, not two out of three, but unanimously say, as the trial's going on or whatever they're doing in terms of the system, that it isn't working in terms of what they're seeing in the law, they can intervene. And they can short-circuit some of the nonsense about the law and just say, well, it's inequitable. Regardless of what the law is saying here, this is not equitable. You gotta do something more equitable in this case, and we'll all sit together and talk about it. They can also intervene in the jury situation. They can go in and give their opinion there, even while they're deliberating. They can give it beforehand. They can give it after the jury comes up. So, you see, what I'm suggesting is that we add to the system, and it won't make it more laborious, and it won't be even be more expensive because the time would get cut way down. If you can trump the system by saying, hey, look, if this is inequitable, it doesn't really matter what the law says. We're going to have to do something here that's a little different than what the law would indicate under normal circumstances. You're not going to have as many appeals. You're not going to have by far as much legal back and forth between sides, because now the question is this just? Because if it isn't just, then it's not good. And you might say, well, that's kind of like the ombudsman kind of thing almost. Yeah, it is. Right. That's almost like arbitration is in some circumstances. Yeah. I'm suggesting that we possibly, and we should start doing this, I think, in civil matters, and then gradually introduce it into the criminal side. And I think it would be a great social experiment to try it. Maybe in one or two states, in the United States, and one adopted, or if it's in another country, in certain courts, but not in others, to see how it works. It's not crazy. It sounds a little nutty, but it's really not. And it could, my guess is it would shorten trials by as much as two-thirds. It would shorten almost all parts of legal systems by that much. That's a huge savings. Yeah, just to hire a few judges. Now, the judges themselves that would be involved in this would need to be really pretty stellar people. We're not talking about just any old person. It's not going to be like a jury. These are people who are really specialized in understanding what spiritual issues are and what virtue is. These would be real, true ethically developed people who also have an understanding that goes a lot deeper. Now, granted, this is like getting into a religion and all that other bullshit. Well, maybe, but not really. It's not. It's actually something different from that, because I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about, if you don't want to say God, fine. Now, how about what is truly right, what is truly good for people? And you could say, well, you could argue about that back and forth, but not really. If you get people who are developed in their wisdom and developed in their love, they will be able to do this. So not everyone, and I think that this job will be a higher level job than the typical judge sitting on a bench would have. Because that judge just has to know about laws for the most part and try to remain neutral. And believe me, sometimes they're not. So this is very important. This really has a kind of a new way to look at things. I predict, I'm going to make a prediction, that within several decades of time, this will be tried. Partly because our present system is almost falling apart and unusable. Most people can't afford, and our society can't afford, the amount of litigation that is taking place. And this is not just in the U.S., it's in a lot of Western countries, terrible stuff is happening. And some other non-Western countries as well. It's like contaminated the whole world because we're in this part of our development mentally, and we're in conflict ourselves. And it's like society is expressing the conflict through our legal system. So I'm trying to give us a cure or something that at least help it out and get better. What other things can we do? Well, that's a big thing, what I just suggested, and I don't know how fast we could do it. I think it would be a great experiment to try. But the other things that we can do are the following. In terms of the present laws, we need to go back to what was the way the law was several hundred years ago. And that was that equity played an almost equal role under common law, if you go to like English law. Not the U.S., but more in England, or in some other European countries. Equity played a stronger role than jurisprudence and just the application of the legal codes. We need to start doing this. Now, I suggested this in another show some months ago, and I'm still very big about this. I think we have to enhance the equity system more and give judges greater leeway in applying equity in cases, and give lawyers, if they're going to be pleading cases, the ability to plead the equity side of things more than just the law. Right now, today, the way it is, especially in civil law, this is true, but it's true throughout the law. If there's a conflict between equity and the laws in our world today, for the most part, the laws win, and equity is kind of disregarded. That needs to be changed. That attitude, where it used to be better, we need to go back to, because we have this, you can't have spiritual justice if you're not even concerned about whether something is equitable. I mean, that's like craziness, but that's what we do. And, you know, and I can tell you that this is something that's pretty close, because for a long time, I've been involved in some matters that really, that this is a great issue. And we'll say the opposing sides in a conflict that is a legal conflict, but it's not really a legal conflict, but they think it's a legal conflict. The opposing sides have never argued, of course, equity. Their only issue is to try to find legal ways to vanquish the side that I'm on. And it isn't me personally, but it's something like that. And the process has gotten to the point where the other side has attempted to abuse the law, even to the point where, in my opinion, they have done many illegal things and paid people off potentially and done things and whatever. And so there's a lot of bad stuff that has taken place because there's no equity. You can't. There's no place to go to try to uncover even the bad things that are taking place. Because, unfortunately, when you have that kind of imbalance in the law, it's easy to pay somebody off or to prejudice someone in a fairly easy way without presenting any facts. Just make a bunch of statements without facts, and the more lies you can produce, the faster you win the case. That sort of thing is a very, very easy thing to do when you're just dealing with a way of manipulating a system through finding various applicable legal arguments. And it also allows a judge who may not be honest to manipulate a case and to do terrible things. So it's really a bad system because it leads to corruption. And the more it's unweighted, and more it moves towards just the one side of application of law without equity, then it's much easier for corruption to take hold. Our country here, the United States, is very corrupt. We have a lot of corruption on so many different levels, it's frightening. And the corruption is probably, it's eating us away. It's probably the worst cancer we have in terms of, we'll call it a national problem. And it's worse than just about anything. Now, yeah, I talked about the tyrannical issues going on in our federal government. But, you know, that's really founded and based upon a legacy of corruption. And you know, just because someone might be a communist or a Marxist or doing certain things, socialist, and pretending not to be, that's not really the bad part. The bad part is that it's corrupt. In other words, they're doing it behind the scenes. They're trying to manipulate, control, and create their own kind of government. And so this corruption has to do with power and control. And it also has to do a lot with money and material gain. So you put these together and you got some really nasty stuff. And we definitely have that going on. That stands in the way of spiritual justice, and it destroys it, because it's destroying what God wants. What does God think? God thinks that we should be cooperating and sharing. We should be looking for ways to give rather than to take. We should not be using power against others. We should not try to subjugate others, but we should be trying to improve others' freedom and destroy the tyranny that may erupt at times in those who don't do the things I'm talking about. So And this is a critical element. And if we're going to really improve our system, we have to look at how we can balance the equity and at the same time get rid of corruption in general. And another thing that I've become acutely aware of in our system, and not just this country, but it's many countries now, is there's a high level of corruption in the people who are within the justice system. And that's really bad, because those are the people that you have to depend upon for trying to find justice. And how can you find justice if the people that you're going to get it from are corrupt? If they're corrupt, you're in big trouble, big, big trouble, because where do you go from there? And it's hard to get around it because, first of all, nobody wants to believe it. And then even if they believe it, they then become frightened to death of it. And they don't want to confront it because these people oftentimes have incredible levels of power where they can end someone's career or destroy their lives in various ways. Sometimes they can imprison people. They do terrible things, or they can do terrible things, and there's nothing to me more insulting to God than someone who is in a position to be spiritually just and who is unjust and who is a crook in some fashion, and who does something really that's prejudiced, biased, and beyond that is potentially on the take, or if they're not on the take, then they're doing it for whatever reason to exercise power and control. But their purposes are so dark that it makes you want to vomit. It gets you to the point where it's not just a question of material things. It's not a question of, it's a question of, to the very deepest levels, of they're insulting the connection of spirit and God to everything around them. They are an insult to life. And that's a terrible thing. Now, can those people be dealt with? Yeah, I think so. So one of the things I suggest is that there be a higher standard, and one that has quicker, better responses in terms of investigating people with high levels of authority and quote-unquote judicial powers, and also people in law enforcement. I'm not saying I know anybody in law enforcement specifically who is doing wrong, but I have had some experiences with them in the past. I didn't know them, though. And if this is the case, then we should have ways of dealing with those kinds of people that are more specialized, rather than having to prove that they have done some kind of terrible crime. There should be a way of investigating what they're doing to others in terms of equity again. And are they spiritually functioning? And does it look like they're doing the right thing? Most people are unaware that specifically judges and even most law enforcement people are not really checked on. Nobody checks on them. And if you were to make a complaint against one, you would have a very hard time finding anyone to go to, because they almost have carte blanche in terms of what they're doing. You could say, well, if it wasn't that way, everybody who went before them would always complain and whatever. Not necessarily. No. As a matter of fact, it would be just the opposite. Because if you have someone who's really a super group of people who do investigate others, but they do so for only the carrying out of spiritual justice, then it would do you no good if you were a real criminal to try and make a complaint, because they would see right through it. You wouldn't get anything out of it. You might even be told, well, you're not an ethical person yourself. But the point here is that we don't really have a balance in the system, and we allow corruption to take hold. When we do that, we are hurting all the elements of what makes our society a good society. So corruption has to go. And then in terms of politicians, I don't want to get too far afield, but politicians are also part of this problem in that they control how the judges are brought in, et cetera, in many cases. Some cases they're elected individually, but not always. And so we have to look at that problem, which I brought up in prior shows, that we need to have much better control over the people that, quote-unquote, represent us. And the present system is not working very well. We've got to stop the corruption among all of the people who are, quote-unquote, in official capacity, whether they're judges or politicians in various legislative or executive capacities. It doesn't matter. We've got to do a lot better to make this country and other countries, because I'm, of course, speaking to people all throughout the world right now, who are exemplary of the highest principles and who will fight to maintain those principles, not only in themselves, that's not the important thing, but in others. That's where we really need it, and that's where it's sorely lacking. There's many people that aren't too bad in terms of how they function, but they see all the corruption around them and they don't themselves, and they don't do enough to prevent it from happening. We need that to stop, if you hear me. And I'm not going to say very much, but the number 59, this is an inside joke, the number 59 is coming up in my life, and it's a very big number. You might say, well, what is 59 going to do with anything? I can't tell you right now. But it has to do with something that is involved with some of the stuff that I'm entrenched in with others. And the number 59 has very recently come to mind. So it's just something. You might say, well, that's a goofy thing to say. Well, of course, but I say goofy things sometimes. Why not? What the heck? We got to be kind of open. And I guess I'm running out of time here. Someone's pointing at something. All right. I'm looking at stuff here. I got to tell you some stuff. All right, Mimi. Mimi's going to be over at Mesa Fiesta on Monday, November 16th. I guess that's coming up this Monday. And she'll be there from 7 to 8:15. She's going to be talking about the Lemurians. She's got some new interesting information about that. So if you can make it and you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area, get over there. That's Mesa Borders, 1361 South Almond School Road in Mesa. It's across the Mesa Fiesta Mall. And she'll be talking. There's no charge. Just go and have a great time and talk with her. Also, if you have a chance, check out Ideal Self-Sorption Resveratrol. Yeah, foreveryoungproducts.com. Use the stuff. It is fantastic. If you have some kind of problem, skin problem, something, some kind of mole or something that just, I'm not talking about cancer, but something that is that's bothering you, try taking some of this stuff with just a little dab of, like, pure water and put it right on it and watch what happens in a few days. You're going to be amazed. If you have an animal, it's great for animals. It works as good on them or better. And there's a formula for animals. Also, Life Balance Association, you can get it. You can get it. That's right. Soul Balance is available. 135 tablets plus 24 enhancing capsules and 24 strengthening capsules. And you can get a bottle by giving a gift to Life Balance Association, $160. You say, ooh, that's a lot of money. Well, the product costs almost that much. And you can get information by calling this phone number. Are you ready? 602-472-5127. I'll say it again. 602-472-5127. Get it because, things are going around about, terrible illnesses. People are getting sick like crazy. This is a way to keep your etheric body in great shape, and it works on an etheric level. And I can't really say any more about it because I am running out of time. Okay, so until next week, I hope this has been an interesting show. I could have really gone out for another hour for sure on this subject. I just wanted to think about everything I said. Hopefully this has been a thought-provoking show. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.